County Sheriff Peyton Grinnell. Over the last month or so, I've had several phone calls from citizens in this county concerned about the number of overdoses related to heroin. I want our citizens to know that I am aware of this serious issue. I am asking our residents to please call and let us know if you know of a location that this poison is being pushed out to our streets. You can remain anonymous. To the dealers that are pushing this poison, I have a message for you. We're coming for you. As a matter of fact, our undercover agents have already bought heroin for many of you. We are simply awaiting the arrest warrants to be finalized. So, to the dealers, I say, enjoy looking over your shoulder, constantly wondering if today's the day we come for you. Enjoy trying to sleep tonight, wondering if tonight's the night our SWAT team blows your front door off the hinges. We are coming for you. If our agents can show the nexus between you, the pusher of poison, and the person that overdoses and dies, we will charge you with murder. We are coming for you. Run.
Well, that was newly elected Sheriff Peyton Grinnell in Lake County, Florida, with a Facebook video that they put up on their department site. And it's drawn a lot of controversy because he's flanked on both sides by two SWAT team officers that are dressed in their uniforms, but the imaging is remarkably similar to an ISIS video. Well, we've got another sheriff from Florida, retired Sheriff Jim Manfrey, on the line with us, and we had a little bit of telephone issues there as we tried to connect. Let me make sure he's with us right now. Sheriff Manfrey, I hope you're with us here on the Henry Rain Show.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, that's good. Very good, sir. And also in the studio is Alan Cross, so you'll be hearing his voice, too.
Good morning, Sheriff, and welcome.
And now you are the retired sheriff from Flagler County, is that correct?
Yes, I was.
Okay, I just want to make sure the bio I'm about to read is the correct one. You graduated from Fordham University in the Bronx, and correct me if any of this is incorrect. You spent 4 years as an investigator and trial preparation assistant for the Bronx and Kings County, New York District Attorney's Office, while attending St. John's University School of Law, Queens, New York. And if I were to continue to read this, we'd find out that you have a law degree. You were admitted to the Florida Bar and practiced law in Flagler County until your election as sheriff. So right there, that's a little bit unusual for most sheriffs. Before we get into the topic at hand, can you tell us a little bit about that career path you chose to get to where you were?
Yeah, it's not the normal career path, but... I had a deep and abiding devotion to law enforcement. I got to learn it from some incredible professionals early on in my career. I was a prosecutor for almost 16 years, and my family was in Florida as well, and I moved down here to help my dad out and wound up getting back into law enforcement. It is an unusual path, but because I've been both a investigator, I've been the ground floor, a prosecutor, I've been a defense attorney, I've been a sheriff, I see the criminal justice system as a complete system, which sometimes law enforcement doesn't always see to their detriment. So it's all of those tools, I think, have helped me see a clearer picture of law enforcement and the criminal justice system as they integrate with each other.
What was your biggest surprise or surprises as you moved from being a practicing attorney, both on the prosecution and the defense side, if I heard you correctly, to actually being an administrator of a sheriff's department?
Well, there's lots of challenges because, our law enforcement officers have an incredibly difficult job. We ask them to do too many things. And as from a management perspective, it was my job to support them and try to give them the tools that they needed to do their jobs well. Our county was one of the fastest growing counties in the state, so we had to rapidly expand. The technology issues that all law enforcement has had to face are things we had to implement very quickly. We were one of the first sheriff's offices to implement body cameras. MDTs, mobile data terminals in the vehicles. So that was
Sheriff Manfrey, if I can just stop you there, because that is a pretty important detail. Did you say you were the first to implement body cameras?
We're one of the first to, I believe Austin Pasco County, where we're the first sheriff's office to fully implement body cameras through our patrol division and into our jail as well, our inmate facility. We did that 3 years ago, and that's where I think my background as both a prosecutor and a defense attorney really helped me in realizing how important that technology was, because most, a lot of effort is done to arrest people, and we don't always see that there's no sense arresting people unless we make a good case that can be, prosecuted in court speedily without a lot of time being spent by officers in that court. And body cameras are a game changer. We had no use of force incidents in the 3 years we implemented. We had no complaints in the 3 years that we implemented it, simply because it changes the dynamic between the officer and the public. The public is not happy when law enforcement is interacting with them. And a lot of times they act out, and sometimes law enforcement inappropriately reacts to that. So body cameras changes people's behavior. It calms everybody down, creates a better environment for the law enforcement officer to do his duty, and for the citizen to know that whatever it is that they're going to say or do is going to be recorded and used against them if they act inappropriately. So I am a big proponent of body cameras, and it has changed every law enforcement agency that it's been implemented in.
Well, that's something that the local law enforcement here on South Tampa Bay and around the Tampa Bay area are considering. And I will get to our topic at hand. Unless you're pressed for time, we're not pressed for time.
I'm good.
The technical side of that. So you got great outcomes, or you got improved outcomes and behavior, but what about on the technical aspect, the maintaining of the file, the breakdown, keeping them operational? Did you have problems there?
No. To be honest with you, the technology every year improves. They have the technology. We use Taser, Axon Taser. They have it's a very strong compartment that it's in. We had little or no problem, not to say we had none, but as each year we were able to upgrade our system, the problems went away. And basically the body camera sits, on the chest of the law enforcement officer, so you get his point of view of why he did what he did, what he observed. At the end of each shift, it's put into an uploading device. It goes to the cloud. It's stored in the cloud, and anybody can then have access to it, including state attorney's office, other investigators who may be further investigating their case, and eventually defense attorneys as part of the discovery process, and then eventually the court. If it goes to trial, it comes right from the cloud, and it's very clear. It is very important that you have policies and procedures when you implement body cameras or when you expect them to be turned on. And in fact, they're always on. The body cameras are always recording, but it only saves what you're recording when you press the button. It saves. It actually saves 30 seconds before you hit that button, and it will save until you turn off. But it's very important to have policies that make it very clear when that body camera has to be turned on. And our policy was used in a lot of other agencies because we perfected it over the years. And essentially, the body camera went on for every traffic, every stop, every communication with the public, any calls for service. So it was very clear when we expected to be on. And I know people have some sense. I was just talking to a group last night. Well, it doesn't work well. It works as well as any camera can work. And obviously, it's important that there are one or multiple cameras on if there is a larger situation going on where there's multiple defendants or suspects involved, and that normally happens. If there's an incident, you get immediate backup. So you get multiple point of views, which is compelling in a court of law.
We're speaking with retired Florida Flagler County Sheriff Jim Manfrey. He is with us courtesy of Law Enforcement Action Partnership. You can find out more about that at lawenforcementactionpartnership.org. That's a mouthful, so let me say it one more time, lawenforcementactionpartnership.org. And Alan Cross, as I listen to the sheriff talk about this, I'm struck by that. his successful adoption of it, or his county's and department's successful adoption of it, this would be an asset because you, Alan Cross, has experienced hospital administration working in an ER. I would think first responders, paramedics, and firefighters for command and control and communication, this would be an asset.
I think it probably would be, Henry, except you run into them problems of medical confidentiality, HIPAA, and those kinds of things. But I've always thought that the body camera for police and fire is just an excellent idea. It just makes things safer. People say, well, does it protect the general public? It really protects the police officer. It's no longer his word against somebody he's interacting with. And it just made good sense to me. So if you can get beyond that medical confidentiality thing, our police and our firefighters getting some just real jams up as well.
And the camera doesn't have a personal interest in the outcome.
No, not at all.
So, Sheriff Jim Manfrey, what we invited you here, and courtesy of the organization that let us know you were available to us, is about the militarization of SWAT teams in Florida, but really around the country. And we had played at the beginning of this segment that Sheriff Peyton Grinnell's video of, and we'll put this up on our Facebook page at Henry Rain Show, facebook.com/Henry Rain Show, so that people can see this, and as well as the resources and links to the organization of that Sheriff Manfrey represents. But the controversy from its tone and similarities to an ISIS video. Before we talk about the militarization itself, I assume that you must have seen this video too.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. It's on a Facebook page, and I don't want to replay all the monologue by the sheriff there, but it's very tough and threatening to the criminals. But if you're putting it on a Facebook page, who are you really putting it out there for?
Well, look, I share Sheriff Grinnell's frustration, this opioid wave that has hit us, just like the pill wave that hit us. Is frustrating to law enforcement because we're the people who have to, interact with families of, overdosed, family members. And we're the ones who have to go after the suppliers of this. And the problem simply is that, I understand what Sheriff Grinnell's intent is, but let's face it, the suppliers nor the users are watching that on Facebook, just as you intimated. If the intent was to try to inform the public that he's going to be tough on this, I get that. But we need the public's confidence. We need to cover the public's cooperation in order to successfully interdict drugs in our communities. And to the extent that it scares the community, I'm sure there's a certain that will feel more protected by that kind of talk. There's a lot of people who are offended by it and would be less likely to interact with law enforcement because of this concept of militarization. I think most good law enforcement managers have realized that the way to successfully interdict drugs or any types of crime in the neighborhood is engaging the community in a conversation, a rational, one-on-one conversation. It would, in my opinion, time would be better spent going into the neighborhoods where drug pushers are and letting the public know that law enforcement is going to be responsive to that. That's what the public really responds to, is that community-oriented policing type philosophy where you engage them and say, we're both in this together. Law enforcement, it's impossible for law enforcement alone to fight the opioid drug epidemic that's washing over this country. It requires a multi-tiered effort. And the idea that somehow we're going to scare people out of it or scare pushers, to me, is short-sighted. And I think the images that Sheriff Grinnell put up on his video, I don't really think helps the overall policy. We need to move from a penitentiary system into a rehabilitation system. Because drug users, all they care about is the next high. They don't care about being arrested. They don't care about their families. They don't even care about their kids. How many videos have we seen where people are overdosing in cars with children in their cars? It is a terrible scourge. And rather than creating a war on it, we need to find better strategies to divert drug users from the system. Because I'm always incredulous that people think arresting people, sticking them in a jail cell, which is some magic box, is going to change their addictive personality. There's much more to it than that. And we need as a country to realize that this war is already lost because we're fighting ourselves. This is not, you know, an enemy combatant. This is ourselves. This is a scourge in our community. It's our family members. It's loved ones. It's our neighbors. And we need to engage a strategy that incorporates diversion policies and rehabilitation as much as we put our effort into just trying to interdict drugs. Because for every pusher you take off the street, there's 10 behind them. And for every person who overdoses, there are 10 people behind them who take it up. So we need to have a much different philosophy, in my opinion, if we're ever going to successfully interdict this problem.
We're speaking with retired Florida Flagler County Sheriff Jim Manfrey. He's here courtesy of Law Enforcement Action Partnership, lawenforcementactionpartnership.org. Alan, you had a question.
Well, just a comment. I think that obviously the sheriff is spot on working in the emergency room. It's not the meth heads and the crack addicts that we're seeing in these emergency rooms. These are young men and women. I can list right now five people that my son or daughter went to high school with. That have been lost because they have decided to, they needed another high. The beer and the wine wasn't enough. They, for some reason, decided to stick a needle in their vein. And it just amazes me as to the trends that you're seeing. And, you know, we have it here in Manatee County, again, in Florida. We're the number one county when it comes to opioid overdoses, and it's very, very tragic. Sheriff, I've often wondered, though, 90% of the world's opium population or opium supply comes from Afghanistan. I don't understand why we don't do what we do with farmers in this country, where we want to maintain the price of corn, so we supplement farmers not to grow it, or to keep the price of wheat up. We supplement the farmers not to grow wheat. Why don't we just eradicate the poppy fields and give the farmers what they would have made to not grow it? You know, it looks to me like if we cut off the supply at the plant source, it may also solve a lot of our problems.
Well, it may sound counterintuitive, Alan, but the problem is when we cut off the supply, what we do is we make it more expensive for the user. So what they then have to do is commit more crimes in order to pay for it.
Oh, interesting.
The fact that there is not a supply does not mean that they will not use the drug. They will go to either another drug, or they'll just pay more for it. So this is the conundrum that we face, that for every drug that we limit, you know, for instance, you know, we had a huge problem with pills. You know, just 4 years ago, that was our number one issue in law enforcement was, people overdosing on Oxycontin and you know, all of its derivatives. And what we did, we put in a pill registry. We cut off the supply here in Florida, which was actually not a supply in Florida, but was supplying a lot of the rest of the country simply because we did not have this pill registry in effect, as most states did. And basically, a pill registry just means that before a doctor could prescribe any type of pain medication, they had to put this registry, check to see if that person had been prescribed medication within the previous 30 or 60 days, and it was a felony if the doctor prescribed once he checked that. So we did. We took that supply away. So guess what happened? Heroin now is the least expensive use. So we can cut off that supply. They'll go back to meth. They'll go back to, we start seeing crack again because, you know, we were successful. And let me tell you, the federal government puts an enormous amount of resources in interdicting opium, not just at its source, but our Navy is utilized to do that. Our Coast Guard is used. Our law enforcement is used to interdict drugs. We do a sensational job of interdicting drugs before they get here. The problem is that there's always You know, this is a business. And I hate to just go back to the prohibition model because it's used so, you know, so often, but it's the same thing. You cannot prohibit people from using something that they want to use. Just making it illegal is not going to make people stop using it. So clearly we need to do something different. I'm not telling you we make everything legal, but we have to figure out something that works better because this is the cycle that we're in. Whatever it is, whether it was crack to kill people, then meth to kill people, then pills, and now we're back to heroin, which was, you know, was hurting our communities 30, 40 years ago. We have to break the cycle somehow. And just, you know, the supply is one of those, but there's got to be something more.
Well, Sheriff, and attorney for that matter, Jim Manfay, if you were writing this policy to get us to a different state of being in our culture, what would the policy be?
Well, you know, there are several models out there that we need to look at. And, you know, what I always suggest is you always do pilot projects. You know, you don't try to change all the system at once, but you do pilot projects. First of all, communities that have done diversion programs, rather than put people in jail who are, you know, for alcohol or drug addiction, but go into diversion programs, and the condition of their probation is that they stay in those diversion programs. Or even mental health issues, which again is another huge issue for law enforcement. When you divert people out of the jail, which is extremely expensive to house people, it's $100 to $1,000 a day, depending on where you are in the country. Rather than spending $30,000 to $100,000 a year incarcerating people, to create more of these diversion programs, mental health, alcohol, and drug addiction. We are 48th, I believe, in the country, in Florida, in mental health dollars in diversion programs. The good sheriffs are asking for dollars for these diversion programs. But again, the public, it's enormously expensive to start it up. But the return on investment long term is much better than sticking people in a jail cell where they just go back out and reoffend, rather than putting them in a diversion program where the success rate is somewhere between 50 and 70% in diverting people from coming back into the system. So that, to me, is the start of it. The larger issue is, you know, countries like Portugal and some of the Nordic countries like Denmark have tried to change the system from a penitentiary system. Rather than arresting people, you give them citations, and that citation requires them to go into a rehabilitation program. And the other thing that we don't see is the huge economic factor in arresting people. When you arrest users, they are not just sitting at home, you know, doing drugs. Most of them are working in our community. And once you arrest them and put them in jail, guess what happens? They lose their job. There's an economic effect on their families. And then there's obviously, you know, a government response that needs to come into effect to support that family. Because this person's lost their job. Wouldn't it make more sense, rather than putting them in jail, giving them a citation, which we use right now? We have a juvenile civil citation program. A lot of communities have gone to an adult civil citation program for small amounts of marijuana. Wouldn't it make more sense to give people citations when they are using drugs, and then make their punishment is there, or the condition of their the citation is you have to get rehabilitation? Doesn't that make more sense than sticking them in jail where they get no help at all? So that's where I think we need to do, we need to be expending our resources. Getting tougher on these issues, I know the public, it makes the public happy. It just does not work and has not worked for millenniums. It's not just not worked here. It's not worked for millenniums in every culture. We need to do something different because people are dying every day. You know, just like I said, Manatee County, Palm Beach County have family. My sister does rehabilitation. People are dying every day, and we have to do something different.
Sheriff Jim Manfay, do you have about two more minutes?
Sure.
Okay. I do want to give Manatee County some credit here. Under previous sheriff Brad Stubbe. He implemented an agreement with Centerstone, which is the mental health organization that treats people here, where if you arrest someone and they're detoxing, they no longer detox in jail, that they're detoxed in a professional facility. And I believe it's continued under current Sheriff Rick Wells. I also have spoken to people that told me that, I don't know if it could have even started before Sheriff Stubbe, but certainly under Sheriff Stubbe and currently, that there is an active recovery group that is in the jail that is working with people, typical 12-step kind of program situation. How did that does that compare with Flagler County and other counties around the state?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of sheriffs are doing spectacular things. Sheriff Knight is Arizona County has a huge diversion program. You know, I've spoken about that. There is a lot of bipartisan support for criminal justice reform, both federally and state and locally. And the leaders are the law enforcement managers and sheriffs and chiefs of police in counties who are running jails and seeing the cost of housing inmates, you know, continue to go up. So, yeah, there are a lot of good pilot programs out there. You know, one of the things that we implemented in Flagler County was Baker Act. I mean, there is a lot of mental health issues out there because the states have basically said it's up to the communities to figure this out. We're out of the business. Well, the communities are overwhelmed financially and can't deal with it. So guess who does deal with it? The law enforcement officers are the default mental health experts in our communities now. How many more things do we want our law enforcement officers to do? So what we did was we would have 3 to 4 people out of our county because the closest facility, mental health facility, was in Daytona. So what we did is we established a relationship with our local mental health facility. And rather than deputies trying to figure out if people are a danger to themselves or the public, we brought them to a mental health facility. The first was a pilot program, and we got a grant from the federal government. And what it did was 2 things. First of all, it saved a lot of time and energy of our deputies being out, transporting. What it did was mental health professionals were able to analyze what issues were. A lot of times, they did not need to be housed for 72 hours. A lot of times, they were off their medication, they couldn't afford the medication, or there were other issues a mental health expert could deal with. And there's, you know, we cut that Baker Act issue down, you know, by 80%. So there are a lot of innovative ways for law enforcement to do it. But the problem is we're talking about county by county instead of the state getting involved and saying, this is our strategy. This is going to be our strategy from this point on. We are not going to, spend money for SWAT teams and all of these other issues. We are going to find a rehabilitative way to deal with our drug issues. And it affects the state probably more drastically than local counties because you have a huge amount of state inmate population. And the state is having a huge problem hiring enough people to keep up with the demand. So again, it requires a systematic approach. Though I laud all of the sheriffs and counties who are trying to do things, different, innovatively, it requires a unified, organized response. So all law enforcement is developing the best practices when you're dealing with these issues, mental health, drug, or alcohol.
We've been speaking with Florida retired sheriff from Flagler County, Jim Manfrey. Alan, it also speaks a little bit, we won't force Sheriff Manfrey to give us an opinion on this, but on the over... the replacement for the Affordable Care Act, one of the controversies was the essential benefits that was mandated under the Affordable Care Act, and that was mental health and substance abuse is one of the 10 things. And I'll give him a chance to speak if he wants, but from that discussion, I would say, actually, that's a pretty good idea, that should be included in health insurance coverage. Sheriff Manfrey, anything you want to leave our audience with before we say goodbye? And by the way, Sheriff Manfrey is here courtesy of Law Enforcement Action Partnership. Find out more at lawenforcementactionpartnership.org.
Just a couple things. The acronym for that is LEAP, L-E-A-P. So if they just remember LEAP, they will they will get, if they Google Leap, they'll get access to its website.
Thank you.
But also, I do agree, just very close up with that, the Affordable Care Act. It just seems, given what we're going through, to limit or eliminate mental health counseling and substance abuse in the Affordable Care Act. Again, it's just against the weight of the evidence of what we need in our communities, because it is enormously expensive to get drug and alcohol treatment, and most people simply can't afford it, so they just reoffend because of that.
Sheriff Manfrey, thank you so much for making additional time for us and the time you were already scheduled for here this Saturday on a probably very busy Easter weekend for you and your other individuals that you're having fun with this weekend. Thank you again.
Thank you, Sheriff.
You're welcome. Anytime. Take care now. Bye-bye.
I know we're about to wrap up, Henry. The two big things: April the giraffe finally gave birth to a bouncing baby giraffe, and another thing apparently
busy on that laptop during the interview.
Yes, absolutely. And the other big thing is that there's apparently a huge a report coming out next week that there is a major report of collusion between Trump's companies and the Russian government, and it's about that. Apparently, it's going to be huge, coming out next week. So I'd say anybody that's
still in the country
that probably need a duck and cover, because we're probably going to blow something else up next week.
Yeah.
Just a little diversion there to something else.
And if we do, you can be sure we'll be talking about it at 12:05 p.m. Saturday here on WWPR 1490 a.m. Again, this interview, which I think has bears well to be re-listened to, because it's got a lot of good information, especially for us here locally. It will be available at henryrainshow.podomatic.com sometime later today, probably, and we'll be circulating that on the Facebook page. Alan, I never asked, do you want people to seek you out on Facebook?
I mean,
it doesn't really matter now, because I've suggested it and they've heard your name a bunch of times.
Right. No, that's fine. I don't mind. I don't mind that at all. I love hearing from people, so absolutely.
And it's just there, Alan Cross.
Absolutely.
On Facebook.
Yes.
All right. Well, you asked for it. And, I hope those of you that are celebrating Easter have a wonderful Easter tomorrow, and we'll be back next Saturday with another Henry Rain show.
From the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom?